20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome into the Wednesday edition of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm Steve Peretz, joined as always by Dusty Evely, Sarah Kelleher. What is going on, guys? I don't know if you've checked Twitter, but there's something going on. The Packers re-signed somebody. Have you seen the news, Dusty? Did you see what happened?
I did. There's like a Kevin King re-signed. I think everyone's really happy about it, which is great. I mean,
it was great. Yeah, it was like $17 million. Like they just threw all the money at him.
Fully guaranteed is the thing. Like it's crazy. Yeah, but I mean, good for them. Good for them. Good for him. It's a good deal all the way around. I'm very happy. We're all happy.
And you know, Twitter just responded really well to all of that. So
I mean, Sarah. Yeah. This is like the most positive I've seen Twitter since the Packers drafted Jordan Love. I mean, honestly.
I wanted to wait a little bit and see how you guys are doing before I jumped into it, but it's just right there. And Packers Twitter went insane today after Kevin King got re-signed for $6 million. We will see what the actual number is, so everybody can pump their brakes and calm down a little bit. We've already heard that number is probably closer to 1 to 2 million plus a whole bunch of incentives. So if he plays well, that's awesome. But you can fully expect the Packers to draft two people at cornerback, and you know, potentially even still make a move at cornerback. So yeah, man, it was wild. I legit saw the news. I think it was like 9 a.m. ish, and I was like, "Yep, I'm done with Twitter for today. Like, I'm just done. I'm logging off. I don't want to see this." And just a lot of bad takes there today. So, but overall, Dusty, outside of the comedy side of it, what is your take on Kevin King coming back to the Packers?
I got a couple. I mean, for the most part, I kind of assumed this was going to happen. I mean, I don't know the specific deal. Like we said, we said Steve, we don't know where the money's shaking out. It's $6 million, but we assume it's not fully guaranteed. It's incentive laden. The assumption on my part all along has been, well, they will likely. It's a deep cornerback draft. I assume they're taking, you know, at least two in the first few rounds. I would assume. With the hope of getting those guys along. And I mean, we all know it's kind of that's, I talk about tight ends a lot. Cornerback's kind of a tough position to transition into. So it takes a year or two generally for a cornerback to get up to speed, not all the time. And actually it seems like that learning curve is down from what it used to be, but you don't expect a rookie corner, especially a second or third round guy, to come in and be a starter right away. So King said, this seems like this guy, he's in here. He kind of, you know, knows what he's doing a little bit. He's inconsistent. I know that the NFC Championship game kind of negatively colors what he did last year, but it's kind of that bridge guy. It's a one-year deal that likely means they're going to be looking at, you know, drafting a guy or two in the draft and using King as that bridge guy, and then he likely will not be around past that. So, I mean, I think for a bridge guy for that deal, it's fine. I mean, it's, you know, I think there are other guys out there, you know, and granted, it's the Packers, so I can't not bring him up. Like someone like Casey Hayward is out there. Like I think Casey Hayward I'd kind of rather have than King, especially given King's health issues and all that stuff. But another thing that I've seen kind of coming out that is really hard to ignore, a lot of his teammates are really excited to see that he's back. Like, I know like Kenny Clark and Adrian Amos and a handful of other guys have been like, yeah, Kevin King's back. Like they seem very happy about it. I think that's, you know, granted his play on the field kind of has to back up why he's there, but I think he's obviously just based on some of the stuff, he's well-loved in the locker room. So I think bringing a guy like that back, even if it's just on a one-year bridge deal that guy seemed to love, I think there's something to that in terms of trying to build that culture with the new defensive coordinator in the locker room there as well. I mean, I think there's something to that. So I don't, you know, I'm not in love with it, but it seems to me, it's not unexpected. And I think, you know, there's some good that can certainly come out of it. For as bad as he played in that last game, it's not like he was garbage his entire career. Like he's put some good stuff out there, so I think it's just a matter of, you know, maybe hopefully being a little consistent, and if not, like just bring some of those young guys along. I think,
yeah, absolutely, the worst time ever for his worst game ever.
Yeah,
but overall, like he normally when healthy is a very solid number two cornerback. So Sarah, what were your thoughts?
I mean, I was kind of just scrolling on Twitter during my lunch break, and I saw this, and I went, read the terms. Okay. So, I mean, I think if it was anything more than one year and there was a lot of money on the table, then yeah, I think a couple red flags would have gone up for me and I would have said, I don't know. But I just think, you know, there isn't like a lot of risk here for the Packers. This is someone that, you know, has been on the team for a while. Clearly guys like him in the locker room. I know Amos tweeted that he was really excited that he was staying. So it just shows like he's likable in the locker room. And like Dusty said, he had his worst game at the worst possible time. And I think, you know, that's really going to kind of taint his reputation for a bit. But I don't think that defines who he is completely as a player. So we'll see how it goes. It's 1 year. It's not a super long-term commitment. And they can kind of, Packers can kind of just see how it goes. But I don't think it's anything shocking.
Yeah. I mean, it's a move like you see all the cornerback moves that were made and it was like, oh my God, Kyle Fuller. Oh my God, Adoree Jackson. Like those, they slipped through the Packers' hands. They should have been doing the, like, no, those dudes were signed for like $13, yeah. $14 million a year, $9, $10 million a year. Like that's not something the Packers can do. And this most likely the way that it's structured is going to be a very low, low, low deal for a cap hit. And if Kevin King plays his ass off and has like 6-7 interceptions, makes the Pro Bowl, like all those things, they can boost him all the way up to $6 million a year. So I think it's a smart move. I think the Packers will, like Dusty said, you know, most likely 2, 3, even 4. I mean, they have 10 draft picks this draft. So I wouldn't be shocked if this is the year that they take a cornerback and throw multiple draft picks at it. So that will definitely be something to watch. Other news for the Packers. There were a couple of restructures that were found out today. Adrian Amos, Mason Crosby. We don't know a lot right now. Looks like they added voidable years to their deals. So kind of reminiscent of the Taysom Hill deal down in New Orleans. So we're still working to figure out exactly how that all works. So I'm guessing the only thing it does is help the Packers get under the salary cap. But, you know, Ken Inglis is always on top of it. So follow him at Ken Inglis to get some info on that one. We did reach out to him to see if the Packers restructured Aaron Rodgers' contract, if he wanted to jump on tonight. And I quote, he was not available, but he said, "Don't worry. They are avoiding Aaron Rodgers' contract like the plague. So I don't expect it to be touched." So, yeah, there you go. There's Ken's update on Aaron Rodgers, which doesn't sound great, but guys, I want to start a new segment. I have had enough of Packers Twitter where there's so much just hate and there's so much just nonsensical takes that come around that I want to have a Twitter troll voice, and I want to have a segment every week where I find the worst Packers take that I can find, and I want your reactions to it. So I'm trying to, like, in my head, cultivate this voice. So over the next couple of weeks, I feel like it'll come to fruition as to what the voice is. But we're going to start here, and we're going to get your reactions to everything. So, Dusty, tell me why the Packers are better than they were at the end of the offseason when they lost in the NFC Championship.
Thanks, Steve.
It's not me. It's Twitter, dude.
Okay, man. I know when you read your own tweets, Steve. It's fine. No, I mean, I think I don't know that they're better.
I hate you so much.
Thanks, man. Like better, I don't know. Like that's the thing, it's a common complaint about. Well, we're gonna complain because they didn't win the Super Bowl last year. They made the NFC Championship game 2 years in a row. Like a lot of teams would kill for that stuff. So if they're better, it's another year in the system. It's another year of kind of growing these guys. You know, Jair taking another step. Aaron Jones, you know, fifth year in the league, doing Aaron Jones things. I think the offensive line is likely taking a hit, but you're also banking on I think I've talked about this before, maybe, you know, a slight jump from MVS. Maybe we saw him, what he can do in this offense. So maybe that's just who he is. But if he takes a slight jump next year, same with EQ, full year of healthy Lazard, like all of those things. To me, it's less of, and then also whoever they pick in the draft. Like, I think right now, and they've lost, you know, they obviously lost Lindsley. That stinks. This was a team that was good enough last year with a jump from, you know, year one to year two in LaFleur's offense to make the NFC Championship game, and they should have won that game. So to me, it's like, are they better on paper? They're probably about the same, but that was good enough to get to the NFC Championship game. But then you factor in these incremental changes, these guys getting just slightly better, and then you add in this infusion of talent, you know, more Dylan. I'm really excited. I think from picking one area, I think Dylan and Aguara. Like, I love Jamal Williams. We all love Jamal Williams. But the difference between the pairing of Jones and Williams and their skill sets versus Jones and Dylan, I think it's going to be a ton of fun. Like, those are just two wildly different sets. And Aguara out there, we talked about this. He looked really good when he was out there. And then he got injured, and that stinks. So I think being able to unleash him a little bit, hopefully a jump from Sternberger. Like, again, on paper, they're, like, roughly the same. But you get these incremental changes and an influx of talent in draft. Like, you don't need, if you made the NFC Championship game and you maintain that and you still have an MVP quarterback, Hall of Fame quarterback with all those pieces, you don't need to get a lot better. You just need to get a little better just to kind of get you over the hump. So I don't know. That's my answer to whatever troll that was, I guess.
Again, I'm not going to name the trolls. And dude, screw you. It wasn't me. Okay. I did not put that thing out.
All right, buddy.
But whatever.
It's just your burner.
Leave Skurhatch. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, we all know who that was.
Terry, you want to start hosting? I do not like this whole thing where both of you guys pair up against me. This is not fun. I find this really annoying. But all right. Next up, Sarah, for you, we've got, oh my God, why would you re-sign Kevin King?
Oh, that's it? That's just the, okay.
Yeah, that was it. That was the tweet. It didn't say, okay, Sarah, but
we talked about this already. And just, I just can't get over that voice that you did.
It's a bit, it is something.
It's an outstanding troll voice. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you.
Listen, for anyone that's concerned about this, I kind of alluded to this before. It's 1 year. It's not like the Packers said, oh, you know, we're going to just sign Kevin King for 5 years. Like, it's 1 year, not a lot of value. And like Dusty said too, like, they're probably going to draft other people and throw other people in the mix. This shouldn't concern you. And the Packers have no money, so they can't really go out and get maybe, you know, the corner that they're looking for. And right now, Kevin King has been okay. So they're like, all right, we have the money to at least keep him around, see how things go. And there it is. So that's all I got to say. We talked about it at length before.
All right, let's wrap this up with the obvious one that was coming. Dusty, if the Packers would have drafted TJ Watt, we wouldn't have even have to talk about Kevin King.
He's right. I mean, I've said this at the time too, was like, listen, man, if Pettine calls that cover one man coverage at the end of the first half, and TJ Watt's on an island, yeah, no, like, he shuts that down. Like, he, you know, step for step with the receiver, knocks that down. Like, I'm in total agreement. No, I mean, I'm as sick of anyone. I do not want it. To me, it's, some of this is like a domino effect for me. If they draft TJ Watt, well, that means they likely don't go out and throw out big dollars at Za'Darius Smith, right? Because they got to pay TJ Watt. So you're keeping him in-house, which means you don't bring in Za'Darius Smith. There's a whole bunch of different kind of dominoes that fall there. And we all love Za'Darius Smith. I love Za'Darius Smith. I'd rather have Kevin King and Za'Darius Smith than I would TJ Watt. Like, that's kind of the way that goes. So we're past the rookie contract at this point. Anyone who's still, anytime Kevin King's name come up, if your knee-jerk reaction is to say, but TJ Watt, you can stop saying TJ Watt at this point. That it should not factor in. This should not factor in because you're paying TJ Watt big money. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. Stop. You need to stop. The end.
No, I'm sorry. They would have signed Za'Darius Smith, but they wouldn't have brought in Preston Smith, and there wouldn't have been this issue with this cap cut. So, okay. The Twitter troll is right.
Okay. Thanks, man.
Sorry. You guys blasted on me enough. I had to come back as you wanted. But, no, I like that. I think this is going to be fun. This is going to be my new project, is finding the worst take on Packers Twitter every single week and bringing it to you guys. So I'm not going to do three all the time, but I think one every week is going to be good. So that'll be a lot of fun. But let's jump in. We have a slew of questions from fans. This is a lot of fun. Now, you guys went way over the top, so we're going to get to all of them that we can. It's definitely not going to be all of them, but first one up we've got from Scott. If you could sign one free agent still this offseason, who would it be? Sarah, let's start with you.
That's a good question. I think, you know, we've talked about cornerbacks a lot and how the Packers can't really afford to go out and get a super high value cornerback. So I've talked before a couple weeks ago about how I think a guy like Richard Sherman would be really great for the Packers, just someone who has that veteran experience. But I don't know if the Packers have the money to pay him. Obviously, they're not going to – like, he's not going to get a max contract or anything like that, but he's still, like, a popular name, and with that comes more dollars. But a realistic pick might be, like, someone at linebacker, just to kind of spice things up and bring more people to the mix. I know I think Eric Wilson is still available, who – played pretty well last year through some things after people were injured in Minnesota. He finished the year like 122 tackles, 3 sacks, 3 interceptions, 2 fumble recoveries. So somebody that's at least able to disrupt on defense. And obviously there's a new coach there. So I think, you know, they Packers go out and get new players, they can mix things up a little bit. But in my honest opinion, I don't really think the Packers are going to go out and get too many more people. I think that we've kind of hit the peak activity for the Packers this offseason. Might see a few more restructures here and there, but that's about it.
Yeah, and for me, I mean, I think the best year's probably behind him at this point, but, you know, we're looking at Packers cap and looking at money and all of that stuff. I've long been a fan of Geno Atkins. I love Geno Atkins, and he was just like, go by the Bengals. He's, you know, he'd be 33 when the season starts. Didn't play a full year last year and was kind of up and down when he was in. But I still think that kind of, it's almost like a Mike Daniels, like bowling ball type stature. Like I think he's got, you know, one or two good seasons left in him if he's played in the right role. So I think, you know, bringing him in, again, if you can get him on the right deal, if you can get him on low-ish money, just because of, you know, maybe people are looking at him trending down, and the defensive line in Green Bay being what the defensive line is, like I think he'd come in and really help out that line. I think just knowing kind of the, again, kind of like a bowling ball, the destructive nature that he can be, what we've seen him do, the leverage he can create, I think Geno Atkins would be, I'd be all in on Geno Atkins. Like I said, I've loved him for a very long time. So seeing him in Green Bay, even if just for a season, I think would be just be a ton of fun along that line.
I'm also going defensive line as well. And I was thinking Kawan Short, who has not been signed yet. Well, it'll be very interesting to see what kind of market he gets, what kind of money he gets, because, I mean, defensive linemen have been signed already, like multiple ones. So, you know, Geno Atkins, as Dusty said as well, is also available. So, I mean, maybe he's looking for the right fit. Maybe he's looking for the right money. I don't know. But, man, if you can throw somebody like that next to Kenny Clark on the defensive line, I mean, that's gold. Like that's some gold stuff right there. So I would love something like that. Next up, we've got Dawn, who wants to know, cheese or caramel corn? Dusty, what is your preference on the popcorn side of the world?
Man, I love popcorn. I've never gotten into the cheese stuff, like whether that's like the orange, or I got a friend that's a big fan of the white cheddar. I, for whatever reason, I've never been a fan of that. So I'm either just the straight like movie theater butter, or like, you know, just over Redenbacher butter, or out of those two, just caramel corn. Man, I love me some caramel corn. So for me, out of those two, it's caramel corn hands down.
For me, it's the opposite. I'm a big fan of cheese popcorn. I kind of forgot about it for a little bit just because it's not super popular here in Florida. And then when we were talking about this question and I saw it, I'm like, oh, that was the best. And I know there's some like specialty popcorn places, or I've been to the farmer's market before and they have like specialty popcorn, and the cheese or cheddar one is always so good. I mean, caramel, it's not bad. I'll eat it for sure. I'm never going to turn that down. But I think the cheese popcorn just does it for me, because I want something like saltier and not as sweet when I'm, you know, itching for popcorn. But I mean, they're both great.
Yeah, this one's very, very fascinating for me, because normally, like, if you give me one or the other, it's cheese. Like, I want the cheese popcorn. But the combination of the two, like, you know, grab a little bit of each and eat them together, it's always really good. And I had a response to Dawn that was, like, loaded up in Twitter, and it was Joey saying put your hands together and from Friends, and I ultimately decided it was way too creepy for me to actually respond that way. But yeah, like the combination, the salty, the sweet, like that's always like way better than just one or the other. So if I'm giving that combination, I can do that, then I'm going to take the combo. But if it's one or the other and I don't have a choice, then it's just going to be the cheese popcorn for me. Next up, Andy Herman. Never heard of this dude before. If Kevin King were an Oreo, what Oreo would he be? Dusty, tell me.
I'm going to go peanut butter pie. I've been on the record. One of my favorite Oreos is just the peanut butter Oreo, because I think it's perfect. It's amazing. And that's your Jair Alexander. Now, the peanut butter pie it's like a mix. Like, it's one of those, like, the mixed cream filling where it's like half and half, you know. It's perfectly fine. Like, it's, if you eat one, like, it's fine, but it's nothing special. And it's got to be, it's one of those things. Sometimes I feel like it tastes good, and other times, like, I don't know. But, like, the ceiling is mediocre with occasional spikes depending on my mood. So I'll go peanut butter pie, because it can be good, but for the most part it just kind of sits in the middle as like it's fine.
So for me it's red velvet, and that's because I think red velvet Oreos are pretty good. Sometimes, you know, they really just hit the spot and it's exactly what I want and what I'm looking for, and other times I'm like, that could have been better. That's how I feel about Kevin King sometimes too. But I also think red velvet Oreos have the tools to make everything work, and Kevin King has the tools and the skills that he needs to be a good corner, and sometimes he just struggles to bring all of that together. So I'm going red velvet.
I think I'm gonna go Oreo thins, because it was a difficult decision for me, but I kind of like the comparison, just because you get that taste of an Oreo where you really, really love it, but it doesn't give you everything you want. And I feel like that's Kevin King to a T, where he gives you the taste of like, oh, I'm going to be this amazing cornerback, but I'm going to blow like seven coverages throughout the year. So, yeah. I think that's everybody's got a fair comparison for that. So, I mean, I kind of like that. Next up, we've got Keith, who is coming in with some Marvel stuff. He wants to know, is it just me, or is Falcon and Winter Soldier going to tug even more at the heartstrings than WandaVision, given the mental health issues that are clearly present for both main characters? Sarah, we'll start with you, because I know this one's close to your heart.
Yeah, so I think it's going to tug on the heartstrings, but maybe in different ways than WandaVision. And I think, you know, these two shows in general are very different, and they're hard to compare just from a material standpoint, right? Like, I saw people say, oh, I think WandaVision is going to be way better than Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And it's like, okay, well, those are two very different styles. One is kind of like, it's more action, and the other is more drama and a little bit deeper storylines and things like that. So I think in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier, they are going to dive into the backstories of both Bucky and Sam, and we'll probably, you know, get to know more about them, what makes them who they are, some of the struggles that they face. So I think it'll be emotional. And I definitely think, you know, mental health will be a topic, which I think is is honestly a big deal and a great thing that Marvel, you know, is doing, that they're addressing some of those things head on. I was really surprised in the best way to see in the first episode, spoiler, you know, this isn't a major spoiler, but you know, one of the characters was in therapy. And I think that's really powerful that you take these superheroes that are supposed to be invincible and they're almighty, but they still need to talk through things. And that kind of brings it back down to a human level of like, hey, you know, even though there are these super beings that can have super strength and do all this stuff, they still, you know, need to talk through things too and feel emotions just like everybody else. So that's kind of, I think, you know, what they're going to address and maybe tackle some of that.
Yeah. I mean, Sarah, you said that better than I could. I mean, that's more or less. I mean, I think it is, it's going to tug at the heartstrings because it's what they do, and it's at the heart of some of this, and getting you know, digging more into these specific characters, that's part of it, is being able to spend more time with these characters and seeing what makes them tick and seeing some of the fallout from some of these actions. Like, yeah, that's absolutely going to happen. But I think I don't know, the players in WandaVision, kind of the stakes involved, the whole created a family out of my extreme sadness and anguish, like, it's going to be really hard to kind of reach those levels for me in terms of like what WandaVision, especially the last episode or two, what those last episodes made me feel in WandaVision. I feel like it's going to be hard to top that. So like you said, I do think it's going to do that probably at a different level, or at least in a different way than WandaVision did. But I think just the way WandaVision kind of spoke to me personally and kind of made me feel things in those last couple episodes, I feel like it's going to be hard to top that. I'm not putting it past anyone. And part of that, honestly, is the length of it, because WandaVision was 9 episodes. I think you spend time with them. And Falcon and Winter Soldier is 6, and we've been through 1. And so we've got 5 left, and the first one I liked, but it felt like a lot of setup. So I feel like we're going to spend less time with them. And so I feel like that's kind of part of it. And again, just the lack of kind of specific family stakes involved, I feel like it's not going to quite get me to that the same way that WandaVision did.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I feel like it doesn't hit as much as being a parent and, you know, the whole thing with WandaVision and the kids at the end of the series and everything like that. Like, that for me, that's where I hit in my heart. I was like, oh my God, like, I can't imagine sitting there and be like, knowing that the universe is going to come collapsing in on it and my kids are going to go away, and like, I'm like not sitting with them or whatever. Like, that was a moment I was like, okay, like, that I was done. And imagining Winter Soldier trying to like top that, I'm super excited to watch the rest of the series, but I can't imagine them like hitting me deep in the feels like that did. So but very excited to watch all of it, so it's gonna be a lot of fun. Next up, we have our very own Cheesehead TV, Maggie Loney. How big does a chicken nugget have to be before it's qualified as a chicken tender? We've had some issues trying to qualify this. Does anybody have a good explanation that can be announced on the podcast? I don't know. Like, you both started laughing immediately.
I'll work on it here. We'll say a chicken nugget, more circular, kind of round. Kind of the same. Well, that'd be for me, kind of almost like a silver dollar pancake or something. It's kind of like a round thing. Whereas a chicken tender's got to be a little longer than, you know, length of your hand or something. I'd say like that's got to be it. I just a chicken nugget's got to be smaller and round, and chicken tender just slightly longer than that. So that's, I don't, if I get any more specific, I have a hard time describing that. But that's the general definition I will give.
Yeah, the pre-show dialogue about this was, yeah, we couldn't come up with a good description that wasn't dirty. So yeah, Sarah, do you have anything? I want to spare you from this one. So do you have anything? Or are you good?
I mean, I was thinking about it more, and I guess a chicken nugget is bite size, whereas a tender, you might have to break it in pieces or take multiple bites. So that's maybe a way that you could differentiate the two. Like, one, you could just eat it at once, and the other might take a little longer. I don't know.
Okay. And I think I've got, in my head, I've got it as a chicken tender is 3 bites or more. If you can't finish a chicken nugget in 2 bites, it's not a chicken nugget. So 3 bites, you have a tender. 2 bites or less, you have a chicken nugget. I think that's a pretty fair description.
I'm proud of us. I'm proud of how this came out. Good job, guys.
You didn't do anything. That was my description. And you just,
what?
Okay.
No, I'm proud of you guys. Okay. I'm proud of all of us for getting through that, what we just got through. I'm very proud of all of us right now.
Oh, my God. All right. Jeff wants to know, does Goody know more about the Packers than the entire Packers fandom combined? Yes, that includes you three. Also, your favorite Easter dessert. Dusty, is Brian Gutekunst way smarter than all of us combined? What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, listen, like, I think sometimes I get stuck in a weird spot, right? Because I think sometimes the GM job is way easier in some respects than we all make it out to be, and in other ways, way harder. Like, this is his job that he spends a very long time doing, and we can sit around and think about these things and look at Spotrac or whatever the devil it is we look at, but like, yeah, at the end of the day, it's his job and Russ Ball's job to manage this roster. Now, I mean, the important thing to keep in mind, it might not always be in a way you like, and it might not always be like someone like the Kevin King signing. You may like someone else, or you may not like that Kevin King is back, and that's perfectly fine. But you have to feel the full roster. And there's also, I mean, I think for me, the biggest thing that I was trying to think about, we talked about a little bit with the guys, except Kevin King is back. There's more here than just skill guys. It's, you know, leadership and guys that are well-liked in the locker room and how that affects the team as a whole. It's not, if you pull Kevin King out or you pull someone out, how does that impact the rest of the team? Like, these are a lot of considerations that, like, honestly, the vast majority of us do not take into account. But a GM has to know that stuff. And maybe that doesn't factor into final decision all the time, but it's at least a factor. So, I mean, if we're thinking, yeah, and if we think even us, who I know talk and think about the Packers a lot, if we're like, well, we know more than Gutekunst, no, we don't, because that's his job. Now, you can disagree with the way he did it, and that's fine, but, like, he knows more about this team, what makes it tick, and regardless of what a lot of people want to believe, they're trying to win. He's trying to put this team in a position to win, not just now, for the future. And sometimes it's very hard decisions, but I think from what we've seen, there's a few blips here and there, and he's very good at his job. He's better. Hot take. Gutekunst is better at his job than I would be doing his job. I know. It's a shocker.
No. You would be amazing as the offensive, you know, air, like, passing game play caller. I would be amazing as the GM. That's where we're at.
Yeah. All right. That's fine. What's the other one? Easter candy. I don't know, man. I love the Reese's specialty stuff. The Reese's eggs. They also have, for Easter, they've got like the friggin', like, the big Reese's bunnies that are huge bunnies just filled with peanut butter. Big fan. Big fan of those. I'll go with that.
So for me, the way I think of a GM, when someone asks, oh, like, do they know more about the Packers than basically Packers Twitter and the Packers blogosphere? Yes, because that one person, Brian Gutekunst, he has the knowledge of all of your favorite people that you follow combined. And he has to bring that all together and then figure out how to make decision. So let's lay this out here. So we have Dusty, who's someone that's super knowledgeable about he's waving right now. You guys can't see it. Waving. Someone who's incredibly knowledgeable about the offense, the Packers offense, what it should look like, what type of players could come in and make an impact, what they're missing, what they need. Then you have someone like Ken, who knows all about the Packers salary cap and what every move means and what move they should and shouldn't make. Then you have people that absolutely focus on the draft, which those people are going to replace us in a couple weeks during the draft. And they know everything about the draft. That's their Super Bowl. And they scout that all year long. Then there's people that love the defense and that they know everything about the defense and special teams, and the list goes on and on and on. So you take all of those people, whoever's your person, and you have to combine all of their brains into one brain, and that's Brian Gutekunst, and that's how he makes good decisions and basically, you know, serves as that guy for the Packers. So I would hope that he is smarter and knows more than everyone else, because I kind of see him as an extension of everyone else's knowledge, and he's kind of like the encyclopedia of the Packers. He has to know everything, and not only know everything, but the implications of what every move could mean, or what if they don't make a move, what the implication of that could be too. So I don't know how he sleeps at night. That's a lot of pressure.
After a couple spotted cows, everybody sleeps really well in Wisconsin. Just saying. But I honestly, I cannot. Honestly, I don't think I can add anything else, because that was perfect. Like, legitimately, that is exactly Brian. That is Brian Gutekunst's job. And people on Twitter, we love you, but you're morons. Because, yeah. Next up, Robin wants to know, a London game seems inevitable for the team. So do you embrace it, or do you think it is a waste of a game? I'm all for it, but I'm biased because I'm nearby in Scotland. Sarah, would you love to see a London game for the Packers?
I would, but I need to go back because I forgot to answer the Easter candy question. So let me answer
quickly. Oh, no.
So for me, it's the Easter sweet tarts that they come in, like, instead of like the circular usual sweet tart shape, they come in like little chicks or eggs and little different like Easter.
So it's just normal sweet tarts?
Yeah, but I don't know why they taste better than the normal ones. Like, I love sweet tarts.
If they're in an egg shape?
I don't know what they do. I feel like they pump more flavor into these or something, or they're a little more sour, and I love sour candy. And so I always have sweet tarts on my desk. But when it comes, like when Easter comes around, they start pumping out. It's like in a green box instead of like the traditional pink, purple, and blue box. And I don't know. They're just really good. So that's my favorite. Not Peeps, because Peeps are disgusting. And it's that time of the year where I have to walk by the aisle that's full of Peeps at the grocery store, and I hate it. Ugh, I just got like goosebumps in the worst way. I don't.
To be fair, I also did not answer this question, so I completely agree with Sarah. Peeps are disgusting. And my jam is Starburst jelly beans. Those are outstanding.
Good. Those are good.
That's my jam for Easter. So, all right, Sarah, go ahead.
Okay. So anyways, yeah, Peeps, disgusting. What's not disgusting would be a Packers game in London. I would absolutely love that. It would be on really early in the day, which would be great. Could watch the game in the morning, and then get everything else done, like grocery shopping and all those other things, meal prep that I usually do on Sunday, done later in the day. So I'm all for it. I mean, that would be amazing. London is on my bucket list. I've always wanted to go there. So I think to actually like see it in person would be super cool too. But I'll take the early morning game. Then I have the rest of the day to do whatever I want. And then I don't have to wait all day. I hate waiting for the Packers to play, because I'm just
too watch afraid. More football. You know, you're going to watch more football.
I mean, yeah, I have that on my TV while I'm cleaning and doing laundry and all the other stuff. So,
yeah, I'd be all for it. I'm not a season ticket holder. We go to one game a year. So for the most part, I mean, you know, I love watching games in Lambeau, especially later in the year, just because you get the cold and the snow, and you know, love the atmosphere. But yeah, game in London. Yeah, why not, man? Like Sarah, like, I want to talk myself into the fact that maybe I would go to that game, because like Sarah, London is a bucket list thing for me. I just, you know, I want to. want to go over there. I want to see the sights. I want to hang out there a little bit. That'd be nice. Realistically, I probably will not go over there. But it doesn't impact me one way or another. And at some point, it's got to happen. So, yeah. Yeah. Hit a London game. The thing I love about the London games, and the same thing with whenever they do the games in Mexico City, is you always get just the random jersey sightings in the stands. Like, I just absolutely love those. It's going to be, you know, I don't know, Packers, Jaguars over there or something, and there's just going to be people with Dan Marino jerseys and stuff. I love just the random jersey spotting it over there, which is just kind of an added bonus to London game. But yeah, I'd be all in favor of London game.
All right, we've got Eric Thiel. What kind of draft flexibility does the Kevin King signing give to the Packers? And the food question, oh nope, we've already got the favorite Easter candy, so let's talk some more Kevin King. What kind of draft flexibility does it give to the Packers, Sarah?
I mean, I don't think it really changes a lot what they had before. I think they might, you know, we talked about this too, they might get one or two guys, whether it be a little earlier or later, and they can mix things around at that position. But I don't really think it like totally changes what their game plan is. I think there's still positions of need and places that they're going to look at and players that they're probably interested in. So I don't, as far as like flexibility, I think most things will stay the same.
I think I'm generally in that boat. I mean, I think the only time it kind of changes is if they've got a guy in mind. I think it makes it so they don't have to reach. Like if they've got a guy, let's say like Greg Newsom or something in first round, if they feel like he's a day one starter, that he could step in and be that number one, they don't feel the need to like trade up and draft him if they don't feel like he's going to fall. If they also have a guy that's also highly rated on their board that maybe they can grab in the second round, that maybe is slightly more of a project. So like that, I can see that scenario playing out where instead of giving up draft capital to go up and get that one guy you think you absolutely need, this gives them, okay, we've got a year with King who, you know, is fine in that role for the most part, a little inconsistent, but we know he can hold down the job and at least be like, you know, a fairly like average number two on the other side of the field while we bring along this rookie that we can grab in the second or third round as a developmental guy. I think it gives you that flexibility. I don't know if they're actually going to do that or not, but I do think it gives you to where it's the same thing. The re-signing of Kevin King is almost the same thing you think of like free agency. It's not necessarily the big splash guys. It's the guys here and there that can plug holes so you don't have to reach in the draft. So you can do best player available as opposed to drafting for need. So I think it gives them the ability to go that route if they need to. If they feel like there's a developmental guy second or third round and King can plug that hole for a year, it gives them that flexibility. Again, I don't know if they're going to go that route, but that seems like that's the benefit that I think King gives you.
It's hard to knock it, but I mean, I think to me, I think both of you guys are right. Like it's a value thing with Kevin King, and then they're going to draft what they can in the draft as far as cornerbacks go. Like they're going to try to find the best value available, but you also have to look at offensive tackle. You also have to, like, there's multiple things you have to look at. So there's always guys that drop, so it's going to be a really, really fun. I love the draft. You guys know that. I'm a freaking a nerd, so it's going to be a fun one. Next up, we've got Matthew, who wants to know, what are your spring and summer sports watching alternatives to the NFL? And food portion, crunchy or creamy, and why? So, Dusty, what are you watching sports-wise that is not the NFL?
I love baseball. I love baseball so much. I mean, as I've gotten older, I've had to kind of, you know, when I had kids, I had to kind of cut back some of my sports stuff. I get so invested in NFL that I used to be big into basketball and hockey as well. But I kind of had to choose and dial some back. So I've got football and then big baseball guy. And I'm a Tigers fan, a longtime Tigers fan since I was a kid. And they're going to be terrible. And they were terrible last year. But I'll still watch, you know, 75-90% of their games. I love baseball so much. That's always kind of my big thing. I love I hate that the playoffs of baseball and the start of football season kind of line up, because I love just baseball in general. I love the baseball playoffs, and I hate that the beginning of football kind of detracts from that a little bit, like just as baseball's kind of ramping up in postseason. But that's my big sports thing. I don't care if they're bad. I love watching the Tigers. Love watching baseball. What was the second part of that?
The crunchy or creamy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. You know, I used to be a crunchy man. As I've gotten older, it's like creamy. It spreads better on the bread. It spreads better on the bread. That's basically what it comes down to.
So you can't process it as much?
It's not that issue. It's ease. I don't like it's like you gotta overcome it when you're spreading. I don't like that. I like the easy spread of creamy.
Okay.
For me, it's pretty much basketball and soccer. So I know right now it's March Madness. I love that every year. I always make a bracket and get really annoyed at it, but it's whatever. It's fun. I like it. It's a fun thing to do with my friends, and my family gets involved with it too. Soccer is always a big one for me, just because there's always a lot of soccer between the MLS and the NWSL, and then also I'm a big fan of the women's national team, and they usually have friendlies in the summer. But I mean, this summer we're supposed to get the Olympics, so that will be really awesome if they can pull that off and that happens. But yeah, it's really basketball and soccer for me. And you know, every 2 years basically, there's the World Cup in the summer. It's always the men's is the year before, and then the next year it's the women's. So that's something I get really into. And that's, I mean, I played soccer for like 15 years ish, so it's like that's there's obviously like I'm very passionate about that, and I like watching soccer. I watch Premier League too, but I honestly think I watch soccer more now that I don't play it, because before I was so busy playing and I was like, I can't watch and play, that's just too much happening. And now it's like, oh, I can enjoy this and kind of miss it when I watch it, but way too out of shape for that, so I just enjoy it. And yeah, with basketball, with NBA, like I don't really have, I mean, like I obviously like I root for the Bucks and I hope for the best for the Magic, just living in Florida, that's kind of how it's always gone. But I'm not like particularly passionate about any of the teams. I'll just kind of flick it on if it's on TNT or TBS and have it on while I'm doing stuff around my place.
Okay, peanut butter.
Yes, I've always been a fan of creamy over crunchy. I just, for the same reason you said, Dusty, it's just a texture thing for me, and it's also a lot easier to spread. Like I'm thinking of convenience when I'm like hurrying up and trying to make lunch, or I'm making lunch while I'm on the phone on a meeting, and it's just easier. So I don't know. I think it tastes better. I don't really like. I feel like crunchy can almost be like a surprise. Like I'm like, oh, I didn't ask for that. I just wanted peanut butter. I didn't ask for all that extra stuff. So I don't think it's bad, but I just definitely prefer creamy.
Okay. As far as me for going for watching sports, I honestly don't do much. I don't have cable. I don't do that kind of stuff. And especially with the pandemic going on, I don't have a lot of sports I watch. I keep track with the Brewers scores because I love it, but I'll be honest, I'm not going to pay extra for it. I'm not going to figure out a way to watch the Brewers games. I'm not going to do that, but if the Brewers games are on normal TV, I'd totally watch it. But outside of that, I watch my kids play sports outside. I do that kind of stuff, but that's about all I got. And as far as peanut butter, you guys are just idiots. I don't like you get creamy and then you have a little bit of texture and you're like, no, I want the creamy peanut butter. No, you want the texture in your peanut butter. Like you want that. Like there's people that add chips to their peanut butter jelly sandwiches on purpose. Like that's what you want. I want the crunchy peanut butter every single time. So thank you guys as always for all the questions. Amazing ones this week. It was so much fun for us as always. But Dusty, Sarah, let's finish this off as always. What are your closing thoughts, Sarah? Let's start with you.
Yeah, I don't really have any this week except the usual. My DMs are open if anyone ever needs to chat. I know it's been a tough few months for everybody now, and just a lot of things happening that are stressors and that are, disappointing at the same time. So I'm here if anybody needs me. I'm happy to talk through some things. I know Even if it's not about Packers, it's just about life. And I've had quite a few of you now just DM me and talk about Marvel, which is great. Love doing that always. So, whatever you guys need to talk about, or if you need somebody to talk to, just, you know, I think I can speak for all of us when I say that we're here, and our DMs are always open. On a completely different note, I don't know who has been following along with the Cinnamon Toast Crunch shrimp debacle, but in the middle, this is actually breaking news. Just posted a few minutes ago while we're recording. The original guy that posted about this and, you know, that started this whole saga said, "I'm happy to report that a carcinologist, which is a crustacean researcher that works at the NHMLA, is going to morphologically identify the shrimp using microscopy, and he will work with a team of researchers to use DNA to try and identify the shrimp down to species." So I guess that's the thing that's happening. I think this is absolutely insane. I don't know. I mean, we're food people on this podcast. We love talking about food, but this is just next level that I can't believe something like this is happening, and only the internet could be a result of this. So that's all I have to say about the Cinnamon Toast Crunch saga, but I really just had to get that off my chest. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, just type in Cinnamon Toast Crunch on Twitter and you will see it. So
I'm still going to eat Cinnamon Toast Crunch. I mean, I
almost had it before we recorded. Like, I was like,
I like Cinnamon Toast Crunch and shrimp. So they're trying to scare me off of this or promote me, try to get me to eat it. I'm unclear. Yeah, echo everything Sarah said in terms of, you know, we're here. DMs are open. If you need anything, reach out. It does feel like, you know, some of the stuff, I know vaccines out there, the light seems to be at the end of the tunnel, but it's still a little further off than a lot of us, I know me personally, would care to admit. So yeah, we're all struggling through, man. So if you need anything, don't hesitate to reach out. In terms of stuff I'm working on, I had last week, I released a piece on the Lombardi sweep that I spent entirely too much time on. That was a lot of fun, kind of digging into the history of that. This week I've got nothing, but next week it's going to hit with the Favre to Rizon pass that opened up scoring in Super Bowl 31. I'm digging back in. I've uncovered, like, I'm like diving deep into a very specific rabbit hole here. I uncovered something. There's this thing, I assume, I don't know if you guys have seen the America's Game segment on the 96 Packers. There's a part where Favre is talking about that specific play. And he's saying that he was watching the Niners Super Bowl 24, and how Montana was checking to Black 59 Razor, and then he threw a touchdown, and Favre was like, "We've got that play," and that's what brought up his mind. The play on America's Game is a lie. The audible does not tie to the play it shows, which is blowing my mind. I came across that a few days ago after digging in, but that's beside the point. It's all beside the point. So I'm getting back into, you know, the kind of the Walsh offense, which, you know, the 89 49ers team, that was the first season with Holmgren at the helm. Walsh had left, so Seifert was there. So digging back into that initial play, I'm finding as much stuff on that as I can, and then kind of tying that into how that played into both coverage and scheme into the Favre to Rizon touchdown Super Bowl 31. So it's one of those things, I feel it interests me a lot, which is why I'm digging in. I have zero idea how anyone else is going to react to this or care about it, but I'm having a blast. So that's going to be next week, that play is going to come out. But if you haven't already, I spent a bunch of time on the Lombardi sweep that came out last week over on Cheesehead TV, that I think was really great. It was really fun. So if you haven't read that one, you can do that. And next week we'll have Favre to Rizon, and it's going to be a lot of fun, I think.
Okay, so I just want to make sure you don't know how the reaction to Favre to Rizon is going to go. How was the reaction to the Lombardi sweep? Please tell me.
It went well. It's a very good reaction. Good reaction to Lombardi sweep.
Which I saw
good.
Lots and lots and lots of quote tweets from like famous ass people that liked what you were doing.
It went shockingly well. Yeah, I was not sure how that was going to go, but yeah, it went remarkably well, so I'm hoping same reaction.
Still
for
not
this.
Sure how the Rizon stuff's gonna go. Okay, so you're just gonna slow play it. Okay,
he's humble. Sure. He's humble. He's just...
It's called imposter syndrome, Steve, and I am lousy with it.
Him and his 12,000 followers. No biggie, you know.
I care about it. I have no idea if anyone else does. Like, I legitimately do not know if people care about the depth that I'm currently diving into for this, but
yes, I'm having they a blast. Oh my goodness. Yes,
I'm they having do. A blast.
Yeah, they absolutely care about it. So I legitimately have no other things to talk about Packer-wise, but on the plus side, I did get my first COVID vaccine shot tonight. So that was very exciting. Nice. I am very happy. Shout out to any of the healthcare workers that are out there doing that kind of stuff like that. Like it was down to a T. Like they had it just nailed. I walked in it. 4:30. I was out of there at 4:55, and I had got my shot, gotten everything like done, registered with insurance, done. Like it was just thoroughly impressive. So, obviously, we love you guys all that do everything for us on Twitter, but in the other world, like thank you to all the healthcare workers that are doing that kind of stuff. So, outstanding work as always, guys. We've got one more week, I think, of the Twitter troll voice before we get into Packers draft. So we will be taking like a month and a week-ish break. I think that's right.
Sounds right.
So there will be a lot of Pack-A-Day podcast coverage for all the drafts. We will be off for it, but you know, as always, you can hit us up on Twitter at Dusty Evely, at Sarah Keller, for at C Perch, and we'll definitely help you guys out if you have anything going on. But thank you as always for listening. We'll be back for one more week. If you have any of the best horrible takes for Packers Twitter, hit me up. I would love to hear it. But thank you for listening. We will talk to you next week, and as always, Go Pack, go!